Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Support WrestleTalk!
Give us a subscribe.
Hey everybody, I'm John Cena.
Hey, it's professional wrestler Colt Boom Boom Cabana.
Hey, I'm Double J, Jeff Jarrett.
This is Rich Swann.
Matt Riddle, the King of Rose.
Support WrestleTalk.
Support WrestleTalk.
Support WrestleTalk. Do it, bro.
Support Ollie. Support Luke. Support WrestleTalk.
Support WrestleTalk. Home of Luke Owen. Whatever WrestleTalk is and whoever Luke Owen is. Quote the Raven. Nevermore.
WrestleTalk Rumble. Now is live.
Hello and welcome to the WrestleTalk podcast. I am Luke Cohen and I'm joined by Laurie Blake. Hello, mate.
Hi, mate. How's it going?
Good, bud. How are you?
Yeah, grand. Getting there. Grand. Getting towards the end of the week. Getting towards Mania. Then we can all calm the F down, can't we? Calm it down.
Can we, though? Because like, yeah, there'll we'll be money in the bank and then it'll be SummerSlam and then it'll be Survivor Series and the whole thing just loops round again. And we'll just be here this time next year. Although, at least by that point, we'll be
it's in the same Mitchell and Webb sketch about football season, isn't it? That's what it is.
No one ever wins the wrestling. It's just going to keep going forever. I did like this, actually. I've had an email. Speaking of like this thing going on forever, it's actually quite nice, actually, because we had this email from Nishant, who has been listening to some of the old podcasts. Talking about like he stumbled across the review for WrestleMania 36. It was nice to hear Luke and Adam talk together. But I like this one as well, where he just said he sent us another one that says, I'm listening to old podcasts like I usually do and came across the review you did for Raw on the 15th of July 2019. It features Steve here from the Going In Raw podcast. If you fast forward to the 44-minute mark, you'll hear Luke and Steve talk about how much they would love to see a match between Brock Lesnar and Ricochet. Living in a world where that match happened, I laughed out loud. Yeah. I don't think that's quite what me and Steve had in mind.
And like a proper one. We're talking a real one, like a good one. That's what we're talking about. A good match where Ricochet's allowed to do stuff.
So there's where I was like, you should go back and listen to that episode. It's got the wild card rule, the 2 out of 3 falls matches. It's the first Raw after Paul Heyman took over briefly. What a time.
Blumenek, yeah. When we thought brighter days were ahead.
Right, well, let's get into the main AEW show itself, because there's some sad news coming out of the main event that John Silver may have picked up a bit of an injury. Here is the show. Johnny Hungy is Johnny Ouchie. I am Luke Owen. This is El Fakeador Laurie Blake, your jam, that champion, because it is sadly being reported that John Silver picked up an injury during his TNT Championship match with Darby Allin at main event of this episode of Dynamite. Welcome to the AEW Review podcast stream. Laurie Blake is, of course, sitting in for Mr. Davis, who is preparing for our points versus hair match. Hair versus points match at this year's WrestleMania. On night one and night two, I believe. I mean, that. And of course, Baker will be having his title on the line against both Andy on night one, and then
Adam on night two. This is, again, another bloody con with this company. Who other champion in any wrestling thing defends their title on two consecutive nights? Not even the Rumble winner gets the WWE Rumble winners don't both have a pop at the same person, do they? Why do our Jamble winners have a go at me?
We had two Jambles to name two we need one contenders.
We need a mid-card title for Adam. That's what I'm saying.
Anyway, let's talk about this main event. It was between Darby Allin and John Silver, a cracking main event over the TNT Championship. I really, really enjoyed this match. Like, quite slow during the sort of ad break portion of it, but like when this match was cooking, it was cooking up a storm. And then like, well, we'll get into the match in just a second, but to kind of go through the news portion of this, after the match, Darby Allin cut a promo for the crowd that was there and said, like, you know, that was a really, really great match. I don't know how many people could tell, but John Silver separated his shoulder during the match, which sounds like it absolutely sucks. Yeah. And Silver himself confirmed this on Twitter, saying like, yeah, it wasn't my night, didn't win the title. Also, the shoulder hurts. And he took like, he's got like a nasty bump on his head as well from where he landed on the concrete. So a rough old night for Mr. Silver. Mm. But we don't, there's been no news about how long he may be out for. Hopefully it's not going to be too long of an injury for him.
Yeah, it's a shame because he feels like he's really building some good momentum. He's really getting over with the Johnny Hungy stuff. Like, if he's out for too long, it could kind of derail that. Because I feel like also the Dark Order got to have this kind of show closing angle as well. It feels like they are being positioned as a very important faction in AEW at the moment. And I think, I mean, you can at least, the benefit is they've got a lot of backups. So they can at least have, if as long as Silver's not in hospital or like recuperating at home, he can at least appear on TV, hopefully in a sling or something, and then still be part of the main kind of thing. But yeah, I guess the kind of goofy roughhousing might have to stop for a little while.
Yeah, it was kind of disappointing for old Johnny Hungy, and like for the Dark Order as well, because like Anna Jay's out with an injury currently. Mm. So if you, like, you lose Anna Jay and you lose John Silver as well. Like, that is a bit of a twofer which you really didn't want to have. It was a lovely moment in this match actually where John Silver locked in the Queen Slayer, which is Anna Jay's finish. It was really good, and he had this sort of manic look in his eyes while he was doing it. It was really quite nice. But yeah, like I kind of hope that it's nothing too serious for them. It was weird that like the Dark Order were brawling with Matt Hardy and his lot. And I was like, didn't we just do this feud? Like, wasn't the whole point of Hangman joining your forces because you lot were feuding? So I don't know if I needed to see that continue.
I'm not massively keen on the ending every episode of Dynamite with a big brawl.
Oh yeah,
I'm not.
They bloody love it, don't they?
And I also like. I am also kind of reaching the point where I'm like, I think maybe they've got too many factions now. Like it's very faction heavy, and I don't know. It just feels a little bit clunky. And I get also like there's a great homage there, obviously, of having the show end. Sting watching the show end with a huge brawl, considering that's basically what his first year back at WCW was when he changed into Crow Sting. Like, I just kind of getting to the point where I want to see a different sort of story being told in AEW, and it's not what I want necessarily. And especially when you're then doing it with the same kind of cast of characters again and again and again. Like, I don't think it seemed like the only thing they kind of snuck in there was new was that Tay Conti was kind of running out with the Dark Order in that bit. And they were like kind of going, oh, okay, well, maybe this is an avenue we might pursue. But yeah, I don't know.
I don't mind the faction stuff, to be honest. Like, I was MJF. I didn't realize it until MJF did a promo about it. It was after he lost to Moxley for the title. Where he was like, I don't know if anyone's noticed around here, but like everyone's in a faction. And I was like, oh yeah, everyone is sort of in a faction, aren't they? Like, apart from Mox, who, and like he's now sort of in a faction, because he's now tagging with Kingston. And like, obviously MJF's gone to, I mean, it wasn't any of that point. I was like, oh yeah, there are a lot of factions in this company. But I don't mind it, because I bloody love a faction. And and the fact that like Matt Hardy's just adding people to his faction, I'm kind of like, I'm quite into it. I just don't know whether I want you to see them. I've literally just seen them sort of feud with the Dark Order, whether this is sort of just do it again or even just continue on from what they're doing. As for the match itself, yeah, I really, really enjoyed this stuff. Like, it told a story that, like, Johnny Hungy is a very powerful lad. He is small, but he is incredibly powerful. He's like, his arms are enormous. He was bumping, like, Darby Allin was bumping like a madman to kind of put Johnny over. But like, there was this kind of like sub story that was being told through this match, which was the ticking timer, because you've got however long the match is or TV time remaining. So at the longer the match went on and the closer it got towards the end of the show, the more desperate Silver was starting to become with his moves. And the fact, you know, Darby Allin kept kicking out of these moves just made John Silver feel even more desperate to win the title. And you've got Tony Schiavone on commentary screaming that the show's coming to an end. Like, he is running out of time to get this. And it really clicked into me when he hits this move off the top and he rolls Allen into the cover, but in doing so, rolls him into the ropes to try cause the rope break. It was like it was a pure rookie error that Silver made. It was just like that one mistake that he made. And then when he went to do the Brody Lee powerbomb, Darby Allin reversed that into the code red to get the win. Like I thought it was a tremendous match.
Yeah, I think they were a really good pairing, because I think you've got that kind of, it's one where it looks like Darby's not necessarily the underdog because of the size kind of difference that I think they've played up in quite a lot of his matches. He's always been against quite large people. And then here you've got, but there is just definitely a strength differential that they're playing off. And Silver chucking Darby around was immense in this. And then obviously like Darby's crazy dive that he did to the outside where Angels pushed Silver. I think it was Angels pushed Silver out the way to take it. And it kind of, the recklessness and the strength worked really well together here, because you just get to see, you know, John Silver is obviously really impressive when he picks up someone twice his size and does something crazy with them. But when you've got someone quite light like Darby Allin, who you can really go see ya with, then you really get to see like just how, especially if he's got a separated shoulder as well. And he's like that toss, it was like a tossing powerbomb almost from the top, wasn't it? Like he just sort of flung him halfway across the ring, which one does not look like a joy to take. Thank you very much. A bit sideways motion as well as the forwards. No, thank you, sir. How do you sort of flat back that one? But it just looked great. Like it looked like a really cool move. And like you said, I thought that kind of the desperation building into the end of it was really great. I wasn't really convinced by Sting coming out. I will say that. Yeah, I feel like Sting came out to kind of keep an eye on the Dark Order, who weren't really cheating particularly.
No, like, because like Allin, as you said, like there's a moment when Allin Angels takes the bump for John Silver, because like Darby does this dive and then like Allin pushes John Silver out of the way. And that's kind of when Sting comes out. And it really was just Sting to just be like, hey, now, steady.
Calm down, as Sting does in his voice.
Less of that. Like, you know, down with this sort of thing.
Stop like, it, lads. Behave yourselves.
I'm not having this, men. I'm not having this. This will be a straight one-on-one match, and that's what I'm having.
There'll be no mucking about on my watch. That's what they said in WCW. No mucking about in front of the Stinger.
With his little flat cap coming out.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey up, lads. I kind of get what you mean, particularly because I know we had the promo with them last week, but I'm almost kind of ready for these two to kind of go their separate paths, particularly because like Lance Archer is starting this feud with Sting. And I thought, I don't need Darby involved in that. Like, and we've got Darby splintering off into this Matt Hardy feud, which is what the sort of ending brawl seems to be setting up, is that Hardy versus Allin is our next TNT title program. I kind of see what you mean. Like, but you know what? It was way better than Sting coming out for a promo with Tony Schiavone and then getting interrupted by Team Taz or interrupted by someone.
It was something different. Like, yeah.
It was so different that I was actually thrilled by it.
I think this is the problem though. It's just, I think Sting being with Darby is just exposing that they don't necessarily know what to do with Sting. Like that, I don't think they have an idea. Like, but it's not. They've not got there yet. Of like, if Lance Archer just destroys Sting, or they have a really good match, then that could be something really interesting to do. But having him just sort of come out and stand around, like they're treating him like this kind of powerful attraction, but you know, Sting is quite an old dude now, and he looks a bit old on TV. And I think you know, him coming out and standing in front of like five dudes in masks who are all pretty ripped, with a baseball bat, I wouldn't be scared of that if I was one of those five dudes in a mask. Like, and I don't think he doesn't, it's almost like he doesn't necessarily have the presence anymore to kind of pull off the character in that particular way. I think there's a way to sell it, and it's definitely with a bit of production behind it and like using him in the right kind of scenarios. But having him just stand at the back and not really be involved just makes me feel like they're just protecting him a little bit too much.
I think it also says a lot about, like, because you said that AEW sort of don't really know what they're kind of doing with Sting, which I sort of agree with to a degree, because I think, you know, we are sort of pushing him down into this Archer thing. And I love that idea that you presented of just like Archer going out there destroying him and like having a proper squash match against Sting would do amazing things for Archer. But I do agree that I think it shows that AEW haven't really decided what they're doing with Darby. Like, the plan was, you know, he's going to go on this run. Him and Cody have had this, like, 18-month thing that started at Fyter Fest back in 2019. It's, like, on Dynamite and stuff. We've had, like, they've both got wins. We had the amazing draw and stuff. And it's all been about, like, Cody's whole project for that 18-month-long feud was to put Darby over at the end. And they did that, and it were great. But then, as, like, Darby pointed out last week, he's only defended the title 3 times since then. And like the whole thing with Cody when he was the champions, he was like defending it on TV every week. So I kind of missed that from Darby. Like he was been in this Sting feud with Team Taz and he's defended the TNT title against Brian Cage in a great match. But I'd like to see a bit of direction for Darby. That's kind of what I'm getting. I want to see out of this.
And I think you've got a ready-made story with Darby as well, where it's like, it's this constant, whereas Cody was kind of wielding the title as like a matter of pride to be like, I'm going to defend it every single week because that's how much I believe that the belt should be on TV and I want to be the hardest working guy. I'm not saying that Darby shouldn't also fill that kind of role with it, but I think you've got this interesting idea of like, there's just this procession of huge dudes that are going to come after Darby Allin. Like the TNT title is literally the target on his back. You know, and that can just bring in all these people that Darby can go on this kind of like almost miracle run against to keep the belt. And then you build up to the person who's going to finally kind of actually pin Darby's shoulders to the mat for the right amount of time. But yeah, I think you could do something really interesting with that. But I don't think him and Sting just sort of not doing very much together is adding anything to either person's career currently.
Just being a bunch of lads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Let's dive into your thoughts on this show. Thank you all so much for getting in touch. It is, of course, wrestletalk.com/support. We will read out every single one of them that gets sent to us. Sairi has said, I just wanted both Darby and John Silver to win. That match gave me anxiety with how much insanely Darby just went for it, killed himself again and again and again for Brody. Kudos to John Silver. He truly showed what he can do, even with the banged up shoulder. Yeah. I loved the match. I thought it was so much fun.
I think John Silver's really on the rise now, and I'm all for it. He's great.
It was there was a thing that Meltzer said on Wrestling Observer Radio. It was last year or so. I think it was quite like early on in the pandemic when it was like, if there were fans in the building, John Silver would be the most over person on Dynamite, because that audience that's there for the live shows, the majority of those people, like probably a large portion of those, are going to be being the Elite followers. And they're going to be watching Being the Elite. And he's getting so over through Being the Elite that they like they'll react so massively for him. And then that will transfer into like a general audience reaction to him. But yeah, I think that he is getting some massive, massive momentum at the moment. Myron Speed said, Silver's counter into the Queenslayer was great, but I'm not liking Darby with the title. His matches really feel like they're telling the same underdog story of him scraping through by the skin of his teeth. Where's the layers to his character as a champ? It's a very interesting point. I was going to mention this earlier as well. I remember when we had the Brian Cage match and someone sent in a message being like, I don't get Darby. And one of the reasons I don't get Darby is because, is he just a bit rubbish? Because all he gets, like, he just gets beaten up all the time. And yeah. that's the story that they always tell with him. And it's kind of, it's difficult to get invested in the stories where he's just being beaten up all the time, because he'd never had the matches where he just wins. Like, it's like all of Darby's matches kind of tell that. So I kind of do see that criticism.
Yeah. And I think his, you know, I think the tale of his character, him sort of scraping by through the skin of his teeth and taking more punishment than anyone else is something they could invest more heavily in to make it a bit more of the story. Because at the moment, they're just kind of doing it because of what he looks like, I think. Whereas I think you could kind of do like, Darby Allin can take more punishment than you can throw out. Like, he can take more. He will wear you. Like, it's home of boxing, isn't it? It's let them punch themselves out and then you just knock them over. Like, that should be Darby Allin's gimmick, basically.
I'm an angel.
But I think, yeah, I think you're right. He does need a couple more. He needs more defenses against like people who there's going to be a bit more of an even match with. And he needs like some squashes, I think, in there as well. Like, he needs to rinse a couple of people to really establish himself as a dominant champion.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Like, I think if you have him win matches and win them into a convincing manner, then the matches where he is against like Johnny Hungy or like Brian Cage is a great example of this, then those like proper underdog stories will mean so much more. We'll just do a few more of your hyper chats. This is on the subject of Kenny and the Young Bucks. Sari says, Young Bucks and Moxley teaming up against Kenny and the Good Brothers. Yes, please. Even though that'll destroy me emotionally. You can see them building this long-term story brick by brick by brick. It's all in the details. Can't wait to get to that segment on the show. William Gossett says, this week's reach for the subtle connection between Paige and Omega. Hangman's new friends all display support and care for each other unasked, whereas Omega is literally trying to bully the Bucks to fall in line, and the Good Brothers couldn't even be bothered to save him. Jam that jam.
And that's Nick a really Corbello interesting said, read.
Oh, that's a really interesting. We were just talking. We were doing one of our Patreon calls, which is actually the new perk now for the $100 backers. You get to have a video call with us. And there was a moment with Matt Jackson and Hangman Page on this week's Dark on Being the Elite, when Matt Hardy tells Nick Jackson, "Oh, it was me that sent you that message that said I don't want to be friends with you anymore." And so Nick, like Matt Jackson's kind of heartbroken by this. He was going to go and like to Hangman Page and apologize to him, but he walks to the Dark Order's room and just sees them having fun. And he just sort of like, and just closes the door on it and walks away. Oh, heartbreaking stuff. And Nick Corbello says, final Omega chat for this stream since I stayed up all night and need to sleep. I literally lolled when Kenny was done yelling at the Young Bucks, turned into the Lucha Brothers superkick and pile driving him. Thank you guys at Wrestle for all of your content. Thank you, Nick. And last one for the moment, Abortion Reborn says, Kenny resorting to emotional manipulation with the Bucks took his character to scary levels of psychotic. Oh, yes. Right. I mean, in which case, let us get into this show, because I cannot wait to... And we actually get to talk about this kind of in the opening segment here, because it's Thursday, and you know what that means. It's time for the AEW review. And we kick things off with Kenny Omega versus Matt Sydal, which started from AEW Elevation a few weeks ago, which is, if Sydal pins Kenny in this match, he gets a future world title shot. And I loved the kind of, like, it was a stipulation that I was like, I'm pretty sure Kenny is winning this match. Like, I was watching this guy, and I'm like, pretty sure that he is. But the fact that Matt Sydal got so many like near falls on him did make me at one point go like, I think they may pin Kenny here. And like, it really added a whole extra level of drama to this.
This really elevated Sydal in my estimations. Like, I really liked him in Impact, and I just thought, like, he came to AEW and kind of got lost in the shuffle almost immediately. Oh, yeah. Like, you know, one botched shoot star pressing, that's where you end up. But this really showed off what he could do. There was just some blooming amazing transitions in some of these things. Like, there was this incredible full body slip and slide, tilt a whirl, head scissors transition he did, his moonsault with the half twist, like standing moonsault with the half twist. And that point where he did kind of, he did a roll up from the one winged angel by bouncing off the ropes to flip himself around and then roll through with Kenny. Like, he looked really, really top flight here. He looked absolutely incredible. And Kenny sold like a champ for him. And obviously, I was really on the edge of my seat for this match. It's like, what an opener.
Yeah. Oh, it was so good. I loved the Poison Rana reversal. So, like, Kenny hits the V trigger, gets him up for the one winged angel, and immediately Sydal hits the Poison Rana. It was so good. And I get, for Kenny, everything that happened is after that point was just like Matt Sydal hits a reversal and gets another near fall. So Kenny just hits a V trigger, goes for the one winged angel. Matt Sydal reverses that. Kenny gets back up. V trigger. And HV trigger felt so much more personal and so much more like, why won't you stay down? Like, it felt like it was a real like anger behind each one of them. Like, that final V trigger that he hit for the, and then the one winged angel was just brutal. It was so, so great. I think
and there's that kind of brilliant moment in that V trigger at the end there as well, because that was the roll up from the one winged angel, and it looked like a three.
Yeah.
Like, it was close enough of a kick out at like kind of at two, that Sydal looked to the referee for a second to see if it was the three or not. And in that time, Kenny had rolled up and was running in to do the V trigger, because he was just like, it was almost as if it didn't matter whether he'd kicked out or not. He was going to V trigger him anyway. And I just think that was a brilliant bit of like the kind of storytelling of the match, that Kenny's just ruthless and it doesn't necessarily, he's just going to do anything it takes to win. And even if it's a close, even if he doesn't know he's necessarily kicked out in time, he's just going to carry on the onslaught to make sure he puts Sydal down. And then Sydal, having to be like, was that it? No, oh my God, here I go. Brilliant stuff. Really, really cool.
My other favorite thing about this match was Don Callis joins on commentary, and he's just like, what a man Kenny Omega is, giving this young upstart Matt Sydal a shot. And JR just shouts him, Matt Sydal is older than Kenny Omega.
Yeah. But the way he's being presented, he's much younger. Callis was incredible on commentary, I thought. He was really funny.
So great. Marvez interviewed John Silver and the Dark Order backstage. We got to see like a very nice moment with him and Hangman Page. And then Hangman Page very quickly beat Cesar Bononi with the Buckshot Lariat. It was just a nice little showcase for Hangman Page. I've said this on the AEW streams before, but anytime that Hangman Page has a wrestling match, I'm always having a fun time.
Yeah, he's really, really good. And like, I love the fact that it's just this very slow build with him to where he needs to be. Like, I think we've obviously all talked about this quite at length, that Hangman's going to be the one to kick out the one winged angel and win the championship, surely. But like, the way we get there, I'm so excited for it. Like, I cannot wait, because I just, this kind of meandering, wandering cowboy storyline that we get with him every single week is just, it's perfection.
It is so, so great. Lance Archer cut a really good promo on Sting. Sorry, mate. Cut a promo on Sting, saying sooner or later it's going to be showtime for him. We've got a lot of promos on this show. Then we had Britt Baker out on the stage, who cut a promo on the women's division, Mick Foley, Tony Khan, and the crowd. It was very, very funny, really. Like, it was just like, everyone sort of applauds, and she's like, is that the welcome I'm getting? This small, warm welcoming? I deserve so much more for this. You know, like, Thunder Rosa, you may have won, but why is everyone talking about me? You know, even though you say you're the one who put women on the map. And then she took a promo on Mick Foley by saying, like, it took you 20 years to become a hardcore legend. It took me one night. It was a really, really solid promo. I really enjoyed Baker in all of this.
Yeah, I thought her selling of it, the whole thing, was brilliant. Like, the line through it as well, of like, I was the one who bled to make it, who bled to make that important. Like, you know, whether or not you won doesn't matter. It's a brilliant bit of logic to be like, I'm the one who took all the punishment that made that really, like, the thing that everyone talked about. Great stuff.
I'm so curious to where they go next with Baker, because they, we get to the other women's segment later on in the show where they're kind of building this sort of like maybe a four person thing there, because you had Nyla Rose and you had Ty Conte, the Bunny, and Hikaru Shida. Baker's not a part of that, you know, that sort of like, I wonder if they just like, you know, not taking Baker off the boil, because that is not the thing to be doing here. It's kind of like when she got, you know, she had this amazing sort of start of the heel run, then she got injured, so they just kept her out the side of the stage, always kept her on the boil there. It's finding a way to keep her relevant and keep her interesting until we get to Double or Nothing, because I think that's when you want to do the Britt Baker versus Hikaru Shida match for Baker to win the belt there. So I mean, I'd be interested to see what they're going to do in the interim between now and when we get to Double or Nothing in 2 months' time.
I think, well, yeah, I guess it depends on what they're doing with Rosa is the other thing. Like, if Rosa's going to go back to NWA where she's contracted, like, if they can keep hold of Thunder Rosa, I think they can do a pretty heated feud with Baker for the next like month. And then they can start to build Double or Nothing with Baker. Because yeah, it's gotta be one of those two. It's gotta be Rosa or Baker to topple Shida for me. Like, I think anything else is actually now kind of wasteful. Like I like the other women in the division. I thought Tay Conti looked incredible in her match. Like last night, but yeah, I just think Rosa and Baker are the stars of the show currently.
I think you could easily do actually Rosa Baker 3, because you had the match at Beach Break, which Baker won. Then you had the unsanctioned match, which Rosa won, which does sort of tie them up one to one, even though technically one of them doesn't count. So you could do the rubber match and find like another gimmick to put around that. I kind of wish the rubber match was the unsanctioned one to kind of like finish this off, because now you've got to try and find a way to go further beyond the unsanctioned bloody brawl that they had.
Yeah, no, that's a really interesting point. But maybe then stripping it back to kind of being quite traditional could be quite interesting. Like a 2 out of 3 falls or something could be quite an interesting stipulation for them to do. But yeah, more of that, please.
That's how
you build a women's division. Come on. It's taking you too long to get here.
Oh, absolutely. We had Dasha interviewing Christian Cage backstage, who was imparting some of her tag team knowledge onto Dante Martin and Varsity Blondes, because they had a six-man tag coming up. And then Frankie Kazarian walks up and was like, hello, old friend. You know, you're too big to speak to me. And I just got flashbacks to my TNA Mark days, when I was like 04 to 08 TNA was like the best wrestling on the planet. And like Frankie Kazarian was one of my faves, and I loved Christian Cage in there. And like, I, you know, flashback to Genesis 07 and the ladder match that they had there, or was Mega Drive as it was called here in the UK. And I was like, so I will say I stole that joke from someone. Like, I was in my news today. Someone left a comment saying like, come on, like, you know, it was called TNA Mega Drive. And I was like, that's such a good joke. I need to steal that. So we're getting Christian Cage's in-ring debut next week against Frankie Kazarian. And they actually teased that Christian might show up on Elevation next Monday, because Frankie Kazarian is having a match there. So, yeah, I think having Frankie Kazarian be Christian's first match in AEW is a really, really smart move. Two men that know each other very well. And, you know, Christian's been out of the ring for 7 years. I think this is a very, very smart move.
Yeah, like a really good pairing. I loved Kazarian's promo here. Like, I loved the bit where he was like, great t-shirt, great catchphrase, just wondering, when does a work start?
When does it start? Yeah.
Yeah, really, really good. And I hope you're not turning into Cranky Frankie. That's going to catch up.
Cranky Frankie. Oh, man.
Yeah.
Like, it feels like we're on, like, Christian. One of the great things about Christian Cage is that he's very Chris Jericho in a way, where he's just like, I've got like 25 catchphrases that I've just had in my back pocket. And I'm just waiting to bust some of these out. And when he got there, he was basically looking at like, okay, nicknames for everyone. Cranky Frankie. I'm going to run with that one for this week. We got a 6-man tag of Dante Martin and the Varsity Blondes taking on the Pinnacle. FTR and Shawn Spears. Like, this is the in-ring debut for MJF's faction, and I loved it. I absolutely adore this faction. Them coming out, they've got this wicked video thing that plays, and it shows them being like these awesome like dudes in their suits and everything. It's got proper Four Horsemen feelings about it, and I dig it. Really, really dig it. And it was really, really great. Like, you know, Dante Martin got the hot tag. Like, they were beating them up. Dante Martin gets the hot tag. Then they were basically just shut him down very quickly, and Spears hit the C4 for the win. It made the Pinnacle look rad.
I mean, all my notes are about Dante Martin's hot tag.
Oh, yeah. It was great.
Oh, my God. It just went on as well. Like, he just, like, obviously, like in a normal tag match, in a four-man tag match, you get like a little bit of this hot tag thing. I think having the trios bit of it just was like, well, I'm just going to extend this by 5 more minutes, this hot tag. Fine. More flips, more things. It was, he looked incredible in this. Mm. And then, yeah, when it was Dax, wasn't he, just cut him off in the middle of it with this just like, oh, got you, brainbuster.
Yeah.
What a way to end a kind of hot tag. It was, I thought this was a really good showing for both teams, really. But I think especially Dante Martin came out of this looking like gold. I like the pinnacle. I think they look really good together. Like, they're a really cool team.
Yeah, Dante and his brother Darius as Top Flight are a team with so much upside. Like, I cannot wait to see, like, because like they're 20 and 19, like they are pups, like so tiny children, and yeah, I think the future is very, very bright for them. And they FTR cut a promo afterwards on Santana Ortiz, where obviously we're going to be getting this Inner Circle feud, and we seem to be setting up here, FTR versus Santana and Ortiz in all of this. And they cut a really strong promo on them. And I love the fact they said the Inner Circle were a joke, but it's not SNL. This isn't some comedy skit. The marquee says professional wrestling.
Dax is getting redder and redder as this went on as well. He was just like, I don't know whether he was doing it on purpose, whether he was attempting to go red or not, whether he was just a bit like tuckered out from having done quite a good wrestling match. But yeah, the kind of increasing intensity of the red color spreading across his face really added to the kind of vigor of this promo.
Oh man, it was so, so great. And like, I love the fact as well, because Cash Wheeler takes the mic off of Tony Schiavone when he's cutting his promo. But then when it comes time to Dax Harwood, Dax grabs it, hands it back to Tony, who's like, hold this. So I'm not holding the microphone. And then MJF challenged the Inner Circle to come out, just like knowing that they can't, like the big dick that he is. And it was interesting. He said like next week they're going to get some gold. So like, I don't know what that means, because it's not going to be tag team gold, because we know that's a Death Triangle and the Young Bucks program. Whether he means the TNT Championship, I'm not really sure what he meant by this, but I'm very curious to know what he means by it.
I really liked the end as well, where like Tony tried to interject over MJF saying like, you know, if the Inner Circle, if you're anything but cowards, you'd come out like now. And Tony tries to point out the fact that like, you know full well that you beat them down so bad that they can't be here. And then Wardlow just looms over his shoulder and he's like, oh yeah, okay, fine, whatever. Yeah, we'll move on with this.
Yeah.
When you're at the pinnacle, you're always on top.
I loved it.
Got a catchphrase.
Hey, do you like promos? Got a couple more of them. Team Taz said that there was no issues within the group, although Brian Cage was rolling his eyes throughout all of this. So it looks like he was even like, Brian Cage even apologized for what he said about Sting's Nikon. He apologized to Ricky Starks, and Brian's sort of like rolling his eyes as if he didn't actually. But when it came to all said and done, and he said like, right, Cage, he did his whole throat slit and said, who better? So he is still on Team Taz's side, but it doesn't seem to be the nicest of waters currently.
Starks didn't seem that convinced either. There was a sarcasm to Starks's, all fine. Like, you know, interesting stuff.
We then got a promo from QT Marshall, so this was a good promo. Like, I enjoyed this. I'm not massively into the QT Marshall character, and I think that might be on me more than it is anything else, but I wasn't massively invested in it. Like, I wasn't really into the whole thing that he was doing with Ali last year, because I felt like that was a very muddied thing. Although I did enjoy the bunkhouse match that they had to kind of finish that all off. But he talks about, you know, like he is Cody's friend, and like he wants to prove that he's more than just being Cody's friend, and that he wants to have an exhibition match with Cody next week to prove this. And Cody comes out. I like the touch of him taking off the headset, because he's also running the show, and said that, you know, Arn Anderson will be the referee next week. And it was a good stuff. There is my minor quibble in all of this. Is that he did say, like, as my wife up there, she's the best person in the world. I've known her since I was 8 years old. And like, I was thinking, mate, your whole storyline last year was that you were like in a relationship with Ali. Where's the consistency, guys?
Well, those are the stakes, Luke. These are the stakes for the match. You know, like, it's about infidelity overall, this story. But no, I thought this was a really good promo. I'm not that fussed I think I'm on the sort of same band with who is like, I'm not massively bothered about QT Marshall taking on Cody. Like, it there's not enough to it for me to, you know, kind of being like, I don't want to be in your shadow. Like, he tried to kind of make it out that, you know, he's there to, he's doing all the work while Cody's kind of slacking off, and he's like making sure his coffees are warm, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I'd like to see a bit more of that I'd like to see a bit more of that, or I'd like to kind of see him turn like, you know, this is either he's lying or this is actually happening and Cody is slacking off and QT Marshall is doing all the work. So like, who's what in this scenario?
Yeah,
you get the kind of sense, you get the sense that QT Marshall is lying because Cody comes out wearing a headset, and that's kind of what they're telling you, is like, Cody's quite a busy man, he's got a lot of work on, he's doing a reality show now with Brandon Rhodes. Like, so let's get to the point where we can find, like, I want to see what happens with QT Marshall from the match next week, because it kind of feels a bit muddled at the moment.
Yeah, I'm hoping that match next week is the thing that's going to like ignite my interest, I suppose. Like, I mean, if it doesn't, then, you know, that's a bit a different matter. But I'm hoping that is what gets me into this feud. You know, because I like Cody and everything. You know, I'm a big fan of Cody. I could do with him adding so much gaga into his matches, because when he was like, and Arn Anderson's the special guest referee, and I'm like, you just can't help yourself, Cody, can you? You just can't help yourself, man.
Rein it in. Rein it in, mate. Rein it in. Not everything has to be constant invention.
Speaking of invention, bloody hell, this next match. This six-man tag of the Lucha Brothers and Laredo Kid versus the Young Bucks and Brandon Cutler. Holy heckins. Right, so like Lucha Bros and Laredo Kid, we haven't seen them actually teaming together in AEW since Fighter Fest in 2019. We actually haven't seen Laredo Kid, like, so like that was the last time he was around for his brief spell. And then I love the Young Bucks, big fan of Brandon Cutler, and this match was just all action and all character, and it all ruled. Loved this match.
Yeah, I mean, for a casual Wednesday night match, this was leaving very little on the table. Yeah. And also, I love the fact that this felt like a proper trios match, where like there was some really good triple synergy between both teams. Like there was some great, there was like both teams took a turn like mid-match to have just their kind of, these are all the triples moves that we've worked out. And they just all kind of did this kind of constant tagging in. It felt, it was obviously like, Jim Cornette's going to hate it, but it was like, it was wonderfully choreographed and really lovely stuff. And yeah, I can't believe that just on a weekly basis, the Young Bucks just go out there and just like, sent on off the top onto the outside, whatever. Like, you know, how are they not more injured? All of these guys, to be perfectly honest, like, how are they not more injured more regularly than they are? Because like the stuff that they're just doing for just a TV match. In WWE, they'd be like, whoa, rein that in by about 55 moves. Thank you.
Just, yeah, if you don't mind.
Choose five. Thank you. Choose five and we'll move on from there. Like, yeah, it is just insane that the kind of the work rate of this specific, like five guys in this match specifically. But yeah, like really, really good stuff.
The other thing that I found really interesting about this match is something that I feel like has flown slightly under the radar, at least. Like, I've not seen many people talking about this. Maybe I've completely missed it. Maybe the chat can tell me. But they announced a house show in this match. Like, they announced that, like, you can buy tickets for a non-televised event that's going to be happening on this date. Like, that's a house show. And that is something that AEW said they're always going to be working towards, is doing house shows. But this is like the announcement of it. I don't know if they have done like non-televised events. I mean, they do so many events because there's like, you know, they've got five TV shows or whatever it is, all named Dark. Yeah. And they've all got 100 matches each on them. But like this year, it was quite interesting to have a house show announced, what they call a non-televised event. So yeah, so I'm curious by this, whether this is something that's going to like continue on. It, while we're sort of like in this pandemic phase of wrestling, and whether that's going to continue on once everything's back to normal.
Yeah, no, I missed that completely during this. So I think that's really interesting to know whether if they're going to do it. Maybe they're just doing it as kind of a trial for having a larger number of people in the arena. Yeah. Maybe that's kind of what they don't want to televise it because they don't really want to flag up how many people that, I don't know. Who knows, really, at this stage, whether it's going to be...
I was going to say, with social media, that like the number would get out anyway, because like someone will take a photo and be like, look at all these bricks, just like who are just all like standing next to each other. I think as well, someone's saying that it's like it's over WrestleMania weekend as well. Like it's on April 9th. So that's also interesting because, like, you know, they're in Jacksonville, Florida, where Raymond James Stadium is. So like, maybe it is, I don't know, like, is that counter-programming in a way? Or just something to, like, say, hey, it's bizarre that it's WrestleMania weekend. Not in a way, because, like, that's what a lot of people do, is they do a lot of, like, you know, house shows and stuff. That's what WrestleMania weekend's all about, is all of these different shows, despite the fact that WWE loves to try and shut them all down. It's the whole thing about, like, a wrestling city. So, yeah, it's very interesting that it's over Mania weekend, because it's something that EW said they wouldn't do.
Well, maybe that's why it's not televised. Maybe it's because they wanted to do a show, because that's, you know, that's a really, it's a great season to do any kind of wrestling show in the city that WrestleMania is happening. But they didn't want to be blamed for counter-programming by not having it televised. Yeah, so I don't know,
someone's just corrected me there. It's on the Friday. So it's the day before Mania. So it's not directly counter-programming. But yeah, it's interesting. I still think it's interesting nonetheless.
Mm, I also like the Young Bucks doing a little homage to Motor City Machine Guns during this match.
I love it.
Let's have that match, please. Yes, let's have that match, please. Yes, come on, bring them back.
And at the end of this, so it looked like the Bucks had this one because they were hitting their big moves onto Penta and Phoenix to kind of take them out, leaving poor Brandon Cutler in the ring, who then got hit with a Spanish Fly by Laredo Kid to get the win. And then once the dust on that has settled, here comes Kenny Omega. Wild, crazed Kenny Omega, who comes down and he just starts beating up Laredo Kid. And you're like, why is he attacking Laredo Kid? And he explains on the microphone by being like, I'm having flashbacks. I'm having flashbacks to Fyter Fest when, you know, these three were teaming up together and they were facing, oh yeah, us, you two and me. And now that doesn't seem like we're a friendship anymore. And he's talking about, like, you know, I had offers to go to various places. I could have gone to the greener pastures of New York. I could have done that. But I chose to do this, not for AEW, but for you two. I chose Matt and Nick Jackson. But Matt and Nick Jackson never choose Kenny Omega. And it was just, it's like, what did you choose? You chose Brandon Cutler, like, to carry your bags. And, like, this is full of all of this stuff. And then he just twists it around, because that's quite like a babyface thing to be doing. But then he just twists it up by saying, like, I'm giving you one last chance to throw this up and, like, you know, and do this with me, to do the too sweet with me. And that is it. And it was just like, as someone, you know, said in the Ultra Chats there, it was manipulating. It was emotionally manipulating the Young Bucks to fall in line. It was a really, for what, as I said, like, could have been good babyface content, he made this such a heelish thing.
Yeah, it was absolutely just digging his hooks into the family vibes. Like, he pointed out, I can't remember which one of the Bucks' families was at ringside, but he was like saying that, you know, it's all about family. And I thought we were a family. And he was like, 12 years of friendship to get here. And then it is that kind of next escalation for Kenny Omega to really, you know, now he's losing friends. It's how does he keep them on the hook? How does he kind of try to keep them in his wheelhouse? And obviously, like, I thought this was kind of, it was interesting to see him go to that level, because it clearly seemed to be the final straw for the Bucks, as they didn't throw up the too sweet and they left the ring, leaving Kenny to be beaten up by Penta, Phoenix and Laredo Kid.
Oh, yeah. And they probably beat him up as well. Like, turned around into some wonderful super kicks from them. And then the assisted package pile driver. And that sets up a six-man for next week, which is Kenny and the Good Brothers versus Lucha Bros and Laredo Kid, which I am so, so excited. So, so excited for. Just on lastly on this this whole non-televised thing, Noren Rad said, like, Florida's a big place, Luke. Over a three-hour drive between Tampa and Jacksonville. When New Japan announced they were doing their London show, WWE counter-programmed them by doing the NXT UK TakeOver show in Wales. That's about a three-hour drive away. Like, we get the same thing here sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely.
and it didn't work out well for them. They generally thought there was like, oh, no one will buy tickets for that. They'll buy tickets for us. It sold out pretty well. We've got a nice promo video for Jade Cargill cutting a promo on Red Velvet. Then we got the promo that Cody and Brandy are getting a reality TV show that's called Road to the Top. I won't be watching it. Are you going to watch it? No?
No. What? No.
Yeah, I didn't think so. And then we've got a fabulous promo from Eddie Kingston and John Moxley, as per usual, talking about, like, if you're in the game, you better be willing to get your hands dirty. Cut this promo on the Bullet Club. And I love these two together. They're just so natural together. It's so cool.
Yeah, it felt very like unscripted and casual. And it was like even the serious nature of it, like the fact that they were quite obviously having fun kind of delivering it. And like he's going, no, something's broken in there. And then to switch that on its head and like be joking about an injury. Ha 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 ha. Yeah, but if you take one of us out, we'll put one of you in the morgue. So, you know.
Yeah.
Like there's that kind of unhingedness there that you're like, oh, okay, well, that's a real... There's a serious danger with Moxley and Kingston now. But, you know, you've really done messed up.
And then we got Nyla Rose versus Ty Conti, which is a rematch from the women's tag title tournament eliminator. I'll be honest with you, like walking out into this match, I was like, cool, well, this is a match for Nyla Rose to win. And then Ty Conti just surprisingly beat her. And like, yeah, I mean, as I said this in my review, Ty Conti's ranked number one in the women's division. Like last week, Red Velvet was ranked number one in the women's division. And I guess like it all happens on Dark, which is going to happen because Dark has like 200 matches a week. So like it's quite easy for you to get up the rankings, I guess. Like Ty Conti comes out and she's like, oh, she's the ranked number one in the women's division. And I'm like, how? How on earth is she ranked number one? And I had the same reaction last week when I was like, oh yeah, Red Velvet's the number one. And I'm not sure. I'm like, I don't think the ranking system is fully working in the women's division currently. And maybe it's just because all of the women's matches happen on Dark that it's not translating through to Dynamite. And it's so like me as who only watches Dynamite, a lot of it doesn't really make sense. Now you could put the blame onto me for not watching Dark, but a portion of your audience watches Dark and you've got the numbers and the statistics to back that up. So surely if you're doing so much of this work on Dark, you then need to use Dynamite, which has got the majority of your audience, to explain all of this and show why she is the ranked number one, right? Like I'm not mad in this, am I?
No, I think a recap would have really helped here. Like a couple of like, here's some wins back to back. But I think the point with the rankings and the point with that whole measurement and statistics and tracking is so that you can book matches like this using the rankings as the excuse. They don't necessarily, like, you know, but I think in the men's division, you get a much kind of better sense, you get a better mix of all that stuff falling together because you'll have such and such a person is ranked number one, but they're not necessarily getting a title shot because the champion's actually in a feud with this guy over something different. And there's that kind of maneuvering that goes on. But because they're not telling enough women's stories on Dynamite, if you fall back on the rankings to book your matches back-to-back weeks, it does expose the flaw in the rankings, which is that they're made up, like to some degree, like, you know,
it's similar to
you know, Goldberg coming out with 20 more wins next week because of his streak is continuing. He's apparently had 20 more matches. That's exactly what is happening on Dark, I guess. But yeah, it's a narrative crutch to kind of book matches. But if you're just going to do it every week, then it does make it seem a bit pointless because it would feel like one loss to Jade Cargill shouldn't make Red Velvet fall that far down the rankings, you know? Like,
yeah, but also like it was bizarre as well because Red Velvet was ranked number one after the Jade Cargill match. For Red Velvet, for me as a Dynamite viewer, Red Velvet's had like one match on TV and she lost it. So then it's the same with Ty Conti here. Like the last time I saw Ty Conti on having a match, I don't think she won that one either. So it's just very bizarre then for her to come out with this match and be like, and she's now ranked number one. It's a very easy thing to do and to kind of like tell that story. I don't think they often do it well.
Well, look, I mean, AEW's not had a wonderful job of telling the story with the women, have they? Where like, look at doing the kind of the tournament for the title and all of that exists on YouTube where no one's watching it necessarily. Like all of this, like these things are all really, and these things are really good as well. Like, you know, I don't know why that wasn't on TV more because it was really good. So it just doesn't make sense. And then you've got someone like, Ty Conti comes out and has this match with Nyla Rose where you're like, oh, well, I think Nyla Rose is going to win this. And then Ty looks bloody awesome in this match. And everyone's going, oh, WWE weren't using her properly. It's like, I don't think AEW necessarily used her properly before this. Like, this is the first time I've really seen the full extent of her talents.
Yeah.
And now I'm quite invested.
Yeah, this match was great as well. It was really, really good. And like, yeah, she had a really nice hammerlock DDT to finish this off, which is a really cool move. And she looked great in the victory as well. So like, it totally took me by surprise. Really did take me by surprise. And they were putting her over so hard on commentary as well, like doing a real good job to build her up. Mm. And actually, this win here has made her now feel like more legit and more like a challenger, a title contender. Because you then had like Nyla Rose attacked her after the match, which I'm not massively keen on. And then Sheeta comes down to make the save. And then all of a sudden, the bunny shows up. And the bunny attacks like Sheeta and attacks Conti with the kendo stick. And all of a sudden, I'm like, oh, this is actually getting really good now because these are some new faces mm-hmm. in the women's title picture. We haven't seen Conti in that position. We've seen like Sheeta, Nyla Rose. I've seen that 1,000 times now. But I haven't seen Conti versus Sheeta. I haven't seen the bunny get into this mix either. So now like I'm really excited for the tag match next week of Sheeta and Conti versus Nyla Rose and the bunny. Because I'm kind of intrigued to see like what moving parts we're going to get to give Sheeta maybe this little mini feud until we can get to the Britt Baker match. At least, you know, what we presume will be the Britt Baker match.
Yeah, I think this is good work here. But yeah, it's just that thing of like it felt like a sudden lurch into like 60 miles an hour because they haven't told the story on the TV show that everyone watches. But yeah, I thought this made Ty look really good. I really liked Nyla Rose. I thought there was great work between the two of them here. I think Ty's knee strikes are awesome. The judo throws are really, really cool. And then, yeah, that kind of brawl at the end of it and Matt Hardy looming over the top of it, which all came back round at the end as well. Like there's some interesting stuff going on here. But yeah, it does feel like it's going to be about a month's worth of here's these four people and then three of them are back off the dark because we'll have Britt Baker and Thunder Rosa potentially.
I mean, I'm excited to see where we get from that. And next week...
I'm excited to see who's number one ranked next week.
Yeah. I mean, who else could it be? It'll probably be... Who's the other one who does like the mixing thing? Maybe that is Red Velvet. Anyway, it'll be someone that I've never heard of. Anyway, next week as well, we're getting the Arcade Anarchy match between Best Friend Miro and Sabian. Pretty sure this is going to be the end of the feud. I think it's going to be wacky, silly fun, and I'm kind of in for it. And to round us off, Scorpio Sky got a video package saying he's underrated, which is also good. But yeah, this Arcade Anarchy match, I think, is going to be bonkers nonsense, and I'm kind of in for it.
The feud should be over already. It should have been over for a while. But I'm fine. Like, I'm fine to see what it's going to be. I'm hoping it's more on the Stadium Stampede end of the kind of goofy match spectrum and not the Matt Hardy compound kind of end of the spectrum.
Yeah.
That's what I'm hoping. I mean, yeah, not the warehouse brawl with Sting at Revolution. That none of that stuff. I want this to be a stadium. This needs to be full goofy and like really, really funny and silly. And I think Miro's got the chops to pull it off.
I 100%,
especially with casting,
very silly match. Yeah, this is going to be a very silly match. I'm hoping this will be like, you know, not so much just the breakup of the team. I'm looking forward to seeing Miro as the single star. Overall, I mean, as I said in the show, like AEW's base level of television is at a really great 2 hours of TV. So from that stand, like it was a completely fine 3 out of 5 show. And I really enjoy watching on a week to week basis because I just know I'm going to get an average show, like a base level average show is a really, really great show. So yeah, so I gave it 3 out of 5 on the review. What about you?
I think 3 out of 5 is like right to going up to 4 maybe at a push, but I think there was a couple of like really transcendent moments in this where, you know, Kenny Omega and the Bucks and the Bucks' match with Penta and that lot, like that was just 15 minutes of pure wrestling magic. That's why you watch something like this, and then the rest of it like had some really good stuff in it. I think John Silver and Darby Allin absolutely crushed it, but yeah, I like it when it kind of evolves and there's that, you know, that moment of progress that you feel. And I felt like the Kenny Omega emotional manipulation side of things was really, really good. His match, obviously, at the beginning was really great as well. So, yeah, good, good show.
Good, good show. And I think I'm out of step with the chat as well, because 4 out of 5 was the Patreon, the YouTube poll that we put up. 55% as well voting for it to be a 4 out of 5 show. 19% saying it was 3 out of 5 and 18% saying it was 5 out of 5. So yeah, people really, really enjoyed that show. And I think that was certainly helped by the fact that the in-ring action was magnificent. Mm-hmm. Let's get into the rest of your Hyper Chats. If you want to get in touch, it is wrestletalk.com/support. We will read every single one of them out. Sarah Sullivan has said, from my brief time of watching AEW, going through the Road 2 series to catch up on old storylines, I've got to say, the Young Bucks are very unlikable, very talented, but super annoying, especially Matt's tough guy personality. They should be heels.
I don't find them annoying. I think they probably are better as annoying heels though. Like from having seen them as over the years as like Generation Me and stuff, I think they play the heel brilliantly. They're really, really good.
Sarah has also added Kenny lying alone in the ring with no one around him after the Lucha Brothers planted him while Callis did nothing was great. Just to show how many real friends Omega really has now. Great show. Ty is awesome. Hangman is so hot right now. Yeah, like, you know, as the other chat we had, bloody the Good Brothers took forever and a day to come out. And they just sort of like just meandered out as well to make the save, just to hold him
up. I like the fact that Kenny was really bleeding from the mouth as well at the end of that. And it was like, yeah, it really did show that kind of how extreme that kind of beatdown he'd been left to kind of take was. Yeah. Too big for his britches, though, isn't he? That's the problem.
LS, and fun fact, last night was the first time in AEW history that the Bucks have teamed as a trio without someone who was not Kenny. That's interesting. And he also adds, or they also add, the Bucks have been trying to have a private conversation with Kenny for months, and all he's done is pressure them with public demands for loyalty. It's manipulative. It doesn't show that he wants their friendship. He just wants them to fall in line. Love all of this.
It's only probably for show.
Oh, so much for show. Matthew Robinson said, wow, the Young Bucks and the Lucha Brothers reminding us how great they work with each other. And now another trios match with Kenny and the Good Brothers. Glad to see Penta back. Why not have Pac in the trio match? I think it's just because it was for the storyline purposes, so the callback to Fighter Fest, so that you could have that. So Kenny could come out and be like, the last time we were in the ring, it was us as a trios team. I think that's why we had Laredo Kid there instead of Pac. I don't know if Pac's actually back in the UK now. Or what is going on. But it kind of like, it sort of made sense from that storyline perspective, I guess, in a way. But also, yeah, like you say, from a technical standpoint, why wasn't it Pac as Death Triangle?
Yeah, I'm not bothered though. I think the Raider Kid is brilliant.
Yeah, interesting though. It was supposed to be Pac at Fighter Fest. It was supposed to be Pac and the Lucha Brothers versus Kenny and the Young Bucks. And then Laredo Kid was the last minute replacement because Pac couldn't make it over. So yeah. Do you want to take over? I'll hot tag to you.
Certainly does. Hang on, we're getting an update as we speak. Pac is injured, chat.
Oh, Pac is injured, is he really? Oh, wait, because I didn't know that, because they announced on the show that they're having a match in a couple of weeks for the tag titles. So I didn't know he was injured. I've missed that.
Anthony Velasquez says, Ty Conti has improved the ring so much. How did WWE let her slip through their fingers? She can be a big player in the AEW women's division for a while if she keeps it up. I think that's, yeah, I mean, how did WWE let someone slip through their fingers is like asking how do sieves let water through. It's because they weren't holding it properly. Like it's, yeah. You know, WWE actively, I think Ty was someone in WWE, in NXT specifically, that kind of fell into that same trap as like Xia Li, who they liked enough to put on TV every week, but didn't really want to do anything with. So they would just get wins and losses. It didn't really matter. And then obviously, Xia Li's kind of found this storyline now, and that's kind of transformed her character. But Ty obviously didn't get there before WWE had to do a round of layoffs, essentially, or she wanted to leave, whichever one came first, which is their big thing. Nick Covelli says, love the bunny coming out to help Nyla Rose against Shida and Conti, and marked out even more when Matt Hardy cut his promo to challenge for the women's title on Bunny's behalf. Looking forward to the match and her and Butcher and Blade playing mind games with Shida.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, really looking forward to that match.
Yeah, I think it's going to be really interesting. Nick Covello said, to add to my last Omega chat, I love the women's tag team match that's set up next week, and I demand to see a Being the Elite segment where Order and Ty thank Shida for saving her, and Negative One asks Shida to train him in the art of the kendo stick and become his sensei.
That's very cute.
That would be very cute. Oh, look, someone's woken up.
Oh, Terry's up.
Here he is. Terry's up. Well, let's get through these before he goes completely blue. Come on. Sawyer says, show highlights for me were seeing Ty Conti shine and get a win, and the news that the Bunny is finally going to have an in-ring program. Love me some Ali. Worth checking out Meltzer putting over Conti and how much of an indictment she is of all the WWE PC.
Yeah, I haven't actually listened to Wrestling Observer Radio, so that'd be an interesting one to listen to. I'll do this next one while you, if you need to.
Yeah, I'm going to try and find him.
Yeah. Matthew Robinson says, I love this episode for all the women's segments. Really like how they're positioning all the different feuds with Conti beating Nyla and now the bunny is added to it. Love it. Looks like they're building many storylines. What do you guys think? I completely agree. Are we getting Terry on the stream? I think that
Terry is. Yeah, he's here. There he is. He's just showed up.
The chat demands it. The chat demands it. Here he is, El Catador.
Say hi, Terry.
Oh, what a lovely cat. Not bothered.
Why
though,
are you just meowing, but you're half asleep? It's weird. You're a strange guy, Terry.
Zari says two trios matches that could have been couldn't have been more different from each other. Variety, that's where the magic is. Sean Spears fits perfectly with FTR. And lastly, Matt Sydal, I knew he was good, but consider me surprised. That was a great match with Kenny. Nick Covella says an amazing episode of Dynamite. Multiple simultaneous feuds going on. Matt Hardy's faction is feuding not only with Dark Order and Hangman, but now also Darby Allin, Sting, and Hikaru Shida. Kenny feuding with the Lucha Brothers now too. Pandemonium.
Absolutely. I think it works really well for the Matt Hardy brand to have like so many fingers in so many pies. It feels like a big corporate takeover. It's great.
Austin Falco, after Hangman won, it seemed like the beer he had was in celebration, whereas last year he was drinking to cope with leaving the ring and going back to his anxiety, loneliness. It's such a subtle thing, but one of the reasons I love AEW and Paige's character. Christopher Jazzcat, Terry the Cat to AEW confirmed. I enjoyed this week's AEW. The stuff with Kenny and the Bucks was a heel having a point in the worst, best possible way. Seeing the Bucks versus Lucha Brothers again was awesome. Ty Conti is still green, but has huge upside. That's the key to it, though, isn't it? It's like, yeah, she is. Same with like Anna Jay and, you know, like Jay Cargill and Red Velvet. You've got very young talent. Ty Conti is 25 years old, mm-hmm. but there's raw talent that's there. And it's about sort of like exposing the, it's accentuating the positives of that talent. So yeah, I think they're doing a wonderful job with that. I'll let you take back over now that Terry's calmed down a bit.
Okay. Mulas says, it is refreshing when we have a wrestling show that is great, even when it's average for its standards. I like this show, but I'm the only one who thought the promos were a bit too much last night. I think that's completely fair to like, this was a criticism that Adam and I always used to level at NXT. It's like, it's always really good. But sometimes it's just not that next step up. Like, you can have really good in-ring action, but sometimes you just need a story that's going to really drag you into the show and go like, oh my God, I can't believe they're doing that. And I think AEW had that last night, to be perfectly honest. I think the Kenny stuff was so compelling that, yeah, it did actually have that little hook. But yeah, the rest of the show, top quality. Mm-hmm. The DS Davis says, I think it's especially cool that the Pinnacle chose to beat down Brian Pillman Jr., whose dad was part of the Four Horsemen at one point. Unrelated, I am so happy that Brandon Cutler is part of the Omega Bucks storyline, even if he's taking pins.
That's what he's there for.
Yeah, but it's good to see him on Dynamite. It's good to see Cutler with his big dragon mask.
His D&D tights, the big dog.
Yeah, my notes at that point were just like, there's a lot of masks on this show. A lot of masks on AEW. New Punk Rants said, just when I think I can't love AEW more, Britt Baker is my favorite woman. Ty Conti is a future star. Kenny Omega is doing all-time heel work. The promos and stories just all so engaging. It's only missing one thing, a certain juice. Hashtag bring back Juvie. I kind of agree that Ty Conti is a future star and Kenny Omega is really... Mm-hmm. This is Kenny Omega we needed when they started doing AEW.
Oh yeah,
just stall on that for a little bit. New Punk Rants also says, I'm invested in QT's character as well. Major DDP vibes. He's in my top favorite performers at the moment, especially since I watched Being the Elite in Dark. Also, the Bucks Omega segment made me cry a little. I smell a swerve. I love this company so much. Hashtag stay juicy.
Smelling a swerve, eh?
Ooh. What swerve would you? Are the Bucks going to side with Omega?
Yeah, like, are the Bucks going to side with him or stay babyfaces? You know, like Sarah mentioned in her super chat earlier, hyper chat earlier, like the Bucks feel like heels sometimes. And maybe are they going to be. But having said that, they did try and turn them heel last year and it did not particularly work.
I think you could do it, but I think you have to have the Bucks have to come close to losing the belts first, like really close. And I think that. They either have to come very close to losing the belts, and they need Omega and the Good Brothers and that lot to protect them, to keep the titles, or they lose the titles and then go side with those guys to get the power back. But something has to happen with the Bucks at the moment, because I think they're kind of at the height of their powers and they don't necessarily need a Maker in his lot. There's no compulsion for them there. Yeah. Peter Mullins says, hey guys, medical stuff. As someone who has regular dislocations, a separated shoulder recovery entirely depends on the severity of the separation. The good news is that a minor separation can heal in a few weeks, but a severe one can take several months. So yeah, I guess it depends.
It depends on where we are. That's what we were saying at the start of the show. I'm going to assume, because we haven't really heard much, that it's probably a minor one. But yeah, hoping for the best.
I think considering he got through the rest of the match, picking up a human being and chucking him around, you'd hope it was a minor one. Black Adam says, I finally get Darby Allin. Darby's strategy is to wear out his opponents by making them waste all their energy kicking the piss out of him so they can't kick out of a roll-up. It's brilliant. If there was any time to call an audible, John was awesome. Yeah, I mean...
Yeah, no, I still think that Darby was the right man to get the win there. But yeah, like, yeah, I think there's a point in time where John Silver should be winning that belt or winning our belt, you know, whether it's the tag belts or whatever it is.
Yeah, and Matthew Robinson says, glad to see El Fagador on the show. Thank you. Gotta love that John Silver puts Darby on the ropes to force the breakup. Wow, so great. How far should they push John Silver? I think a TNT championship is a good start. Yeah, I definitely think so too. I don't think yet, but I think some sort of like... down the line, there's so much story in that, and there's a lot of emotion to tap into. I think it's probably too raw to do it right now for a lot of people. I think, especially for the Dark Order guys, but I think give it maybe a year, and then kind of let's come back round to this idea that John Silver wins the TNT Championship, because I think that it could be really poignant at some point.
Yeah, I think AEW have shown that they've got quite a lot of restraint when it comes to. Like, that's the story we wanted to tell, but like, we need to get there first, as opposed to just rush it and just sort of snap into it. Sort of AEW general chat, Abortion Reborn and James Handley have both got very similar points here, which is Abortion Reborn says, how does Give Us a Mox and Kingston reality show sound like Give Us a Brandy and Cody reality TV show? And James Handley says, TNT made a mistake giving Cody and Brandy their own reality show when anyone can see that the real power couple in AEW is Moxley and Kingston. Yeah, I mean, I probably would watch Moxley and Kingston more than I will watch Cody and Brandy. But I don't think we're going to ever get John Moxley being like, oh yeah, a reality show, that sounds fun.
I want to watch them just decide where they want to go for dinner.
Oh yeah.
Like, them just bickering about the, like, where do you want to go for dinner, John?
Yeah, so there was a bunny on one of her like Twitch streams that she did. Like, she hit this sort of target and stuff, so she had to call Eddie Kingston and ask what he thinks of her. And she called Eddie Kingston on this Twitch stream on his day off. So he just cuts a promo on her. So you got to call me on my day off? Like, I don't like you anymore. And what I want now is I want a reality show from the other side of that, where Kingston picks up and be like, "What? Why is Ali calling me on my day off?" Abortion Reborn said, how do we do Hangman's going after Kenny? Hangman's getting wins and climbing the ranks. It's too obvious, and it's Christian's gimmick. Maybe he gets the number one spot and holds it for ages until there's a blood feud reason to pull the trigger. Thoughts? Yeah, I mean, I would say that it's, you can do the story of like Hangman gets the number one position, but then isn't ready to go after that sort of match, so he doesn't do it. Or you could do the match and have Kenny and have Hangman lose again. And then, you know, like, okay, well, cool. So he's lost again to Kenny Omega. What does that do next for the Hangman character?
Well, I think the third option is that Hangman gets to the number one spot and that drives Kenny insane. You know, that's, if Kenny is this kind of paranoid, psychotic champion who's like testing people's loyalties and, you know, doing it all as this public display of affection, like seeing his former tag team partner, best friend, as the, like, you know, as the person in the top spot who should be coming for him, and then maybe him not coming for him, is the kind of thing that's going to push him to action, to be like, why aren't you doing this? What's your plan? What's your game plan? Like, you know, there's a bit of kind of, yeah, there's something really interesting in that.
Abortion Reborn again said, with the Pinnacle versus Inner Circle feud, Tully feels a wee bit extra. Maybe Bischoff to the Inner Circle as a foe to Tully. There have been a lot of Jericho-Bischoff interactions. There have been more fun than feudy. The Zorni says, hi guys, hope everyone is all right. My question is, how many AEW shows, Elevation, Dark Dynamite, BTE, Sammy's Blog, do you watch, or would you watch if it was not your job? How many WWE shows, don't know all the names, would you watch? Yeah, I watch Dynamite. I try and catch up on BTE if I get a free half hour, but like, I don't watch Elevation, don't watch Dark, don't watch Sammy's vlog. And I would watch Dynamite even if this wasn't my job. WWE is a different question. I would watch NXT, and I would watch the highlights of Raw and SmackDown probably. Yeah, and I haven't got time to watch all of the stuff.
I would be led by what the reviews said, and I would watch those matches, and I'd watch highlights of the rest of it because
always watch the pay-per-views though.
I can't watch any other TV show on a regular basis, so I don't think wrestling would fit in otherwise.
Yeah, like I've always said, like I when this wasn't my job, I wasn't watching Raw and SmackDown on a weekly basis, but I'd watch the pay-per-views because it's easy access for me on the network.
That's what Austin, video packages are for, Lou.
Exactly, the video packages tell me what I need to know. And listen to Wrestling Observer Radio or going in Raw or something. Austin Dietrez said, "Do you guys think Hangman Page will beat Kenny Omega for the AEW Championship at next year's Revolution?" I think it'll be Hangman. I got a feeling it's Hangman. I don't know when, but I got a feeling it's Hangman.
Kind of hope it is next year.
Matthew Mikowski says, "I'll continue on from my last one, although I think this is the first one we've read out. Surely at Double or Nothing, they do faction versus faction matches, members of the IC versus members of the Pinnacle. What do you think the matches will be? Also, we bloody need a Penta Says t-shirt. I'd put good money on buying that shirt." I've absolutely no idea what we'll get for Double or Nothing. I couldn't even begin to speculate on what matches we'll end up with there. I mean, like Jericho versus MJF is probably one that we'll get, whether, you know, you'll get like FTR and Santana and Ortiz. I feel like that's probably more of a TV match, but Jericho versus MJF feels like that's probably on the pay-per-view.
Yeah, I could see them doing that. And I could potentially see them doing a huge tag match between the rest of the members as well, but like earlier in the show for some sort of advantage in the match for Jericho and MJF. But yeah, other than that, I don't know.
The DS David says, "I love the untelevised house show announcement as if AEW isn't going to record it for Dark," which I think is cool of AEW to give their talent a show to perform on like they normally would during Mania weekend on the indies. Obviously, those are limited. Matthew Robinson says, "Normally I hate reality TV shows, but something about Cody and Brandy show just looks interesting. What do you guys think?" I'm not a reality TV show guy, so I it's not for me. And the DS Davis says, "Also, the Arcade Anarchy match will hopefully be more like the Best Friends versus Santana and Ortiz backlot brawl. That's how Best Friends like to end their feuds, with a big old hardcore brawl. Looking forward to Trent taking..." I don't know if Trent's going to be ready by that point. Maybe the chat can fill me in on that one. Taking the orange spot in the match. Matthew Mikowski also says, "I love Laurie. We want Mr. Davis back." On another note, two killer shows. Killer main event segment for NXT. And I know this is a Dynamite stream, but dear God almighty, inject HBK versus Adam Cole into my veins immediately. They teased that last night. I mean, I think he probably wants to make up for the Saudi Arabia debacle. So
yeah, it's got to go out on good terms. Yeah. Doing it against his younger self would be the best way to do it.
We've got a few more to round us off here. Justin McClucky said, "It's clear and obvious that the blowing up of Mr. Davis can be the work of one person, the most savage heel of all WrestleTalk, Hollywood Salcedo. Don't worry, she's on my list of suspects. I'm going to ask her." I mean, my detective skills haven't failed me yet. "Dried chicken without flavor. Maybe it wasn't a man who tried to blow up Mr. Davis. It could have been a woman." We'll soon find out.
It's two for the Disney's.
Villain owner 10. Oh, good. I mean, Alex is also on my list of people to ask.
Alex, yeah.
Could be Alex. Villain owner 10 says, "Luke, mi amigo, don't you know? Don't know if you remember this, but I'm the bastard who always give you Spanish lessons on the Friday show. I've been inactive because for some reason my bank blocked my Patreon payments. Love everything you do there. Gracias por todo. Thank you very, very much. I did wonder where you had been, Villain owner." And lastly, LuchaBot said, "Hey guys, love to see that champion on the podcast. You should have him on podcast more often. Much better than WrestleMarks, Ollie and Luke every week." So it is horrible when people do enjoy wrestling. You mentioned that we are inching closer to the weekend. Have you got any plans for said weekend?
Not really. No, I think I'm going to try and stream some Monster Hunter Rise because that comes out tomorrow and I've pre-ordered it and I love Monster Hunter. So I think I might try and get over on Twitch and do some of that. Last Life Co, if you want to hang out.
Yeah.
Last Life Co. Plug, plug, plug. Pluggity plug. Come over.
I've got a plug to do as well. I was partially involved. I've sort of helped with the launch of a Kickstarter Games Master, The Oral History, that launched today, is a book that covers the definitive history of the 90s TV show. I interviewed the co-author, who was the host of the TV show and the publisher. It's got a goal of £45,000. It's been live for 3 hours, and it's at £22,000. Actually, basically halfway there now. So really, really pleased about that. So if at all you're interested in 90s television and want to know what it was like to make a TV show in the 90s, where essentially they just said, just do whatever you want. That is a real fascinating insight into that sort of process.
Good old television. Why was television so easy to get on back in the day? Now it's I don't know, it's gone backwards on games, I think, is the crazy thing about television. Like, you know, I know Simon Longdon, who housemate Simon from Wrestle Talk, works on quite a lot of sort of TV shows that deal with video games, and he constantly phones me up being like, attempting to explain video games to TV executives is like beating your head against the wall. But it's like back in the day, they were just like, yeah, go do it, make a show.
Now it's impossible. When I've spoken to people who worked on this show, that were just like, oh yeah, we basically just said like, oh, should we do this? Yeah, fine. And then like Channel 4 had no issues whatsoever with anything they did. Like, they didn't even ask any questions. They basically were just like, yeah, I mean, you've got 18 episodes, do what you want with them. And so they did.
It's just baffling though, because it's the biggest thing on YouTube. Like, gaming is the biggest thing on YouTube. Twitch is completely dedicated to gaming in every sense, and that gets millions of viewers across many, many hours of content. There's all these other ones that have been set up. Then TV goes and commissions something like The Circle, which might as well be a video game. Like, we were talking about it yesterday on the After Dark podcast, how like it is a board game. It is a social deduction game. It is Among Us, essentially, but for Instagram. For influencers, basically. But like, you commission something like that, and you can see how game mechanics feed into really good TV shows. Loads of shows, game shows. Why can't anyone just make a good video game show for TV? And the commission's just like, I just don't understand it.
Because, Laurie, we need to have things like bank balance, where it's just like, you know, this giant balance beam, and Gordon Ramsay talking about different weights and stuff that go across the balance beam.
What?
Have you not seen this?
What is bank balance? I need to see this.
It's the new game show that's on BBC One, and it's hosted by Gordon Ramsay.
Get in the bin. Get lost. What is this? I'm going to have to watch a clip now, Luke.
And it is literally like a cross, like an X balance beam. And you've got to, it's a literal bank balance. You've got like different amounts of money that you've got to balance on the beams.
This is stupid. look how big and unnecessary that set is. So, to be fair, when I first worked in TV, I worked on a show called Heads or Tails, which was Justin Lee Collins. And the idea was that you basically like double your money every round, but it's all on a coin flip.
Oh, all right. Okay.
So you judge, but obviously, like, because it's TV, it couldn't just be a coin. They created basically this catapult to flip this gigantic. There's no, I mean, it didn't come back for a second series, did it? So that says everything you need to know about Heads or Tails. What a load of shit.
It's just difficult, isn't it, now? Because like, one of the most popular game shows we have here in the UK is essentially like, it's a slot machine game. Where it's, I don't even know what you would call it. It's kind of like a pachinko machine, really, where you just sort of drop something down and just, like, you know, down to the old arcades by the seaside. What even is that show called again?
Oh, God, I don't know. Is it Ben What's-His-Face that presents it?
It is Ben something, isn't it? Okay.
Ben Shepherd, is that his name? Ben Shepherd?
Yeah. Ben Shepherd game show.
Tipping Point.
Tipping Point.
There you go.
Tipping Point. Yeah, it's essentially just like you just put the thing in and it just bounces around and then it lands and then it may push over some coins. Sometimes it doesn't. And like, and that's the game.
Yeah. It's the worst bit of a pier. Yeah. They made that a game show, yeah.
Yeah. So, and that's why bank balance gets commissioned, because it's a very simple concept to explain to someone. It is a literal bank balance.
That's the thing, because no one, when they went to the pier to do their research into the 2p machines for Tipping Point, no one looked in the corner and was like, Tekken 3? Tekken 3's here? Like, because that's all I did when I went. Like, my nan lived in Brighton when I was growing up, so we used to go to Brighton all the time. And every time we did, we'd go on the pier, and me and my brother would disappear for an hour and a half while my parents played the 2p machines to just play Tekken 3, because it was the only place we knew in the country that had Tekken 3, because it took 2 years after it was in arcades to even come out. So me and Jay were just like always, oh, Tekken 3, Tekken 3, plays all the different characters, try and get all the way through. What a game. What a game. That should be a game show.
Yeah, right. Absolutely. Because I go down to Hastings a fair amount because my sister-in-law lives down there. And I go down to like their arcades, always dead excited every time to go down to the arcades. But it is just 2P machines. Like they don't have... they have like some arcade games, but they don't have like I'm after a Time Crisis, I'm after a Point Blank, a House of the Dead type thing, even like a Tekken or like any somewhere like a World Heroes or something. Nope, it's just racks upon racks upon racks upon racks of 2P machines where you can win like little knockoff Tweety Birds and or like the little grabber machines as well. They literally say on them, yeah, there's a chance like these will just drop at random points, so you may not win a prize.
Excellent stuff. Just the pier has died a death. The arcade has died a death. That's the thing, you get these like new arcades like Heart of Gaming and stuff in London where it's more like you pay and they've got all the machines and they kind of restore them and keep them safe. Or like Four Quarters, which was by our office.
It was, yeah. But with Four Quarters, I mean, it's I love Four Quarters. But what's kind of great about Heart of Gaming is that everything's set to free play. So you essentially just book your time in. You know, I'm just going to pay for 2 hours or whatever it is. And then everything, you just go and like everything's set to free play. Just play whatever game you want. And it's wicked, isn't it? Because they had like
a lot of people doing Taiko Drummer. There's always loads of people doing Taiko. So noisy. What an aggressively obscene game it is.
When I was in Tokyo a couple of years ago, like that is everywhere. Like you're just like, you're just in a supermarket and there'll just be one that's set up in the corner. And it's just like everyone absolutely fucking loves it. And when we went to a couple of arcades while we were there, and there were like queues to get on.
Really?
Yeah, people absolutely loved it. There was no queue to get onto the Luigi's Mansion arcade game, and I can tell you for why. It weren't very good. Wasted quite a bit. Wasted money playing.
How does that even work, a Luigi's Mansion? What do you do? How does it work?
Well, it's basically like one of those ones, like a you know, like the Lost World arcade game where you kind of like sat in the truck thing. It was like and you got like the big screen in front of you, and then you basically got a Hoover. So it's kind of like a shooting game, but you just got the Hoover in front of you instead of a gun.
Just a duck to like empty the bag. You use the pedal. You pedal, and Luigi's desperately emptying the bag of the Hoover, and he's like pops back up.
Yeah, it went very good.
Goodness gracious, the arcade.
I played quite a bit of yen on that as well. Oh. But yeah, I mean, I've got nothing on this weekend either, to be honest. As I said on the other show that we were doing, my wife's going for a walk, so I've got the house to myself for a little bit. So I'm just going to do some editing, and that is pretty much my weekend sorted. I may try and play a game, may try and dive into Yakuza 0 again. But I'm so worried.
This is how you can get over the half hour barrier you've set yourself for gaming every week, where you're like, I only get half an hour to play games. If your wife's out, she's out. Get the games on, mate.
She is, but I've got this editing I need to do as well. Maybe I'll take a day off from work and I'll do that instead. I'll edit on my day off because when I take a day off work, I still can't play games then because my wife's in the living room using the off, like that's her office. And she uses the PlayStation to watch TV because it's the only form of TV that we have. We don't have like a box or anything. So we've got iPlayer and 4OD and Netflix and everything through the PlayStation. So that's the only way that my wife can consume any content. So I can't even then just take the PlayStation up for a few hours and play a game on my own.
See, this is why when I moved, I got Virgin TV. Because we were doing the same thing. And I was like, I never get to play this anymore because we're watching a lot of Channel 4. We've watched all of Friends again for some reason, but I haven't played many games. So we're gonna get a TV thing.
Yeah, I may just go like an Amazon Fire Stick or something. Because then at least if I take the PlayStation away, there is still TV available.
Just get a smart TV where it's all built in, mate.
Well, that is well. I mean, I've been banging that drum for ages that we need to get a new TV. Because our TV, it's actually my brother's old TV. And my brother bought that TV in like 2003, maybe. So, like, it is an old-ass
TV. Is it HD ready?
It is HD ready. Absolutely, it is.
Oh yeah,
it has those got are the thick, ones. Thick black. It's got a thick black rim around it. It weighs a ton, and I know it weighs a ton because I have to keep carrying it up and down the stairs when we decided to go and watch ER in bed. So like, look at them up and down the stairs.
I think it's you need well to get ready. A few. I think what you need is a few tellies.
That is also an option. I think once we do get a new TV, which is on the list of things to get, I'll move the other TV up into the spare room.
More screen time.
That's what everyone needs, is more screens. Do you know what? Let's draw this to a close, though. Thank you all so much for listening. I'll be back tomorrow with Denise Salcedo for the magazine show, going through your mailbag questions. I have made the suggestion to her on Twitter, whether she sees it or not, because... Rob Zombie's new song is the theme tune for NXT TakeOver Stand and Deliver. And Rob Zombie's come up in the conversation a few times on our show as of late because I bloody love me some Rob Zombie. So I'm going to try and get Denise Salcedo to listen to Rob Zombie and review it on the magazine show. See if she actually takes it up. I doubt she will. But tune in to find out tomorrow. And then Pete and Andy will be doing the SmackDown show on Saturday. So there's all sorts to get your teeth into. Have a nice weekend, everyone. Take care. I love you. Goodbye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.